Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday hump day. We're in the middle of the week in between the two desert teams, Arizona State last Saturday, and of course, homecoming against the Arizona Wildcats this Saturday night in the Coliseum, 7:45 p.m. kickoff on ESPN. Khalil Tate and the Wildcats with Rich Rod coming into town to take on the Trojans, who are 7-2, trying to win the Pac-12 South. Huge pivotal game to see who's going to win the Pac-12 South and represent the South Division in the Pac-12 Championship game. Okay, so today what we're going to do is we still have some questions left over from Arizona State, so I'm going to answer those myself first. And then we're going to bring in Jason Shear, who does a great job covering Arizona for 247, the 247 Scout Network. So we're going to talk to Jason and kind of preview this game, get a sense of what these Wildcats are all about. Of course, the huge turnaround, winning the last four games. They've been on fire. So we want to talk about all that. If you have any questions or comments for us, podcast at uscfootball.com. That's our email. And our voicemail / text line is 424-254-9141. That's 424-254-9141. Okay, so before we jump into all the stuff, so we got some questions, like I said, then we'll take a little break. We'll bring in Jason Shear and talk to him a little bit about this huge football game. Just you wouldn't have pictured USC and Arizona as being one of those pivotal games, but it certainly is now, and Khalil Tate has been the major difference. But if you want to go to the game, make sure you check out the SeatGeek app. I just pulled it up right now. If you want to buy tickets to the homecoming game, USC versus Arizona, as cheap as $37 on SeatGeek. But if you want to buy, it doesn't have to be complicated when you buy tickets to a sporting event or concerts. There's a better, simpler way, and it's the app I was telling you about, SeatGeek. It's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. They have a seamless mobile experience where you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing the Trojan in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. So I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, like I just told you about. You can actually get Dodgers tickets for the World Series starting about $1,000 or $1,017. But if you need tickets for anything, anywhere, you can just a few taps away, you can instantly find the seat. So best of all, for our Peristyle Podcast listeners, like if you want to go to the homecoming, or heck, if you listen to this in time, you want to go to the World Series game tonight at Dodger Stadium, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So all of our Peristyle Podcast listeners, go to SeatGeek, get the SeatGeek app on the Apple or the Android phone, download the SeatGeek app and use the promo code USC. So that's important. Use the promo code USC and you'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Yeah, it's pretty cool. You can, when you go to the app, you can check to see where the seats are and they'll tell you what's a good value. So it's a really cool high-tech app if you want to, anything about the seats and where you're going to be and all that kind of stuff. It shows you everything. So it's pretty cool. So go check out SeatGeek now. And like I said, you get $20. So that's pretty cool. Well, okay, so I want to jump to these questions. We're going to try to knock them all out and then bring in Jason and preview the USC-Arizona game. So Dave in Newport Beach says, is there any coincidence to some of the things that come up on the podcast week after week and now show up in games? For instance, I saw a sideline shot of Sam Darnold. He had his headset on, I presume, talking to the coaches upstairs. The first time I've seen this, and could a number of snaps Michael Pittman had last Saturday be related to his father's tweet? In any event, I'm glad to see him on the field more, Dave in Newport Beach. Okay, so two things. One, Keely Ewer said the same thing, that he was wearing it more. Now, he does wear it sometimes. It's kind of a quicker communication thing. So I wasn't specifically watching him in this game, but I think he had it on more now. So, and as far as Michael Pittman, I tweeted something like to that effect, and his dad actually tweeted me, and we got into a little bit of a Twitter argument, I guess you could say, during the game. But, we parted on good terms. I mean, I don't think there's anything, the squeaky wheel gets the grease sort of deal. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. There's probably some truth to that, but some of it is just, him getting healthy again. You know, his dad was saying he was fully healthy. I think the same sort of thing. We were kind of calling for Tyler Vaughns a lot, and sometimes coaches make decisions and they get stubborn and they want to stick to it and they want to stick with it. And it's not really, I'm not saying it's the right or wrong one, but, you know, maybe perception is that it's wrong. And then you kind of see later, like, yeah, he probably should have been playing. Like, yeah, Tyler Vaughns should have been starting, you know. But whatever, you know, they had some reason not to do it. And then sometimes it's like, okay, for the game or two. And I think there was a reason last year that Max Brown started. I mean, there were some obvious reasons, but there's probably better reasons that Sam Darnold should have been starting. But for whatever reason, they put precedent on the reasons that aren't as important as, you know, if you're talking about, hey, who's the best receiver? There was an argument on the Peristyle. Well, the guy that catches the ball, I think I'd rather have him. You know, like, so, well, this guy's faster, this guy's stronger. Like, well, I like the guy that catches the ball because that's the most important aspect of it. So, Sam Darnold was a better quarterback. And so, yes, maybe one guy was older, maybe knew the system, whatever. But the better quarterback, the guy who was going to make plays, the guy that was going to lead you down the field, that's the one you'd want out there. So I think sometimes coaches will make a decision for a reason. I mean, obviously they make decisions for a reason, but it's not always the best reason. There's other reasons that are better, but in their mind, when they're prioritizing things, they switch it around. And we make those decisions in our day, you know, every day. Like if you're choosing to pay one bill versus the other, and you decide to pay, you know, some meaningless bill as opposed to a credit card that you get like 20% interest on, like you made a decision, you had a reason why you paid this other bill, but the 20% interest is probably going to hurt you more long term. So yes, I think they make decisions. I think they do, we've talked about this. I think they listen to what we're saying a lot. I mean, Clay Helton has walked up to Dan Weber and Keely Ure and all of us after games in the Coliseum and asked them what's going to be on instant analysis. So I think they know what is being said. And I'm not saying that that's what they take into consideration, but I think we can be kind of a mouthpiece for the people because we get a lot of fans email us. You see the outrage. They talk to us and we kind of talk about what they're talking about. And I think the coaching staff sometimes needs to know, like, hey, what are the people saying? Now they can see on Twitter. I mean, if you watched, you know, when we put up, so I was at the Notre Dame game, I put up a Facebook Live of Clay Helton's post-game presser. Every comment that came by was negative. They were so mad. It didn't matter what he said. But I would go back and look at when USC would put something up too. Same sort of thing. They're complaining. They're bitching about it. Just like they would on our feed for different things that we would put up. So I think they kind of know. But, you know, we're a way, I think we're a way to show what, and we're the biggest site out there. So it kind of gives a pulse of what the Trojan fan base are feeling. And there's people in the administration and the coaching office that, you know, read our stuff. Sometimes they'll call us out and say, hey, I don't like what you said here, blah, blah, blah. We've never been told like, hey, don't say this, but you know, they'll express concerns over certain things we said, and we'll talk about things, and you know, we either stand by it or say, oh, you know, that was a mistake, we should correct it. But good stuff there. Let's see. Curtis in Moreno Valley said, how to limit Mr. Tate from Arizona? The question is for I didn't realize he had this for Coach Harvey Hyde, but I'll answer it. Sorry about that, Curtis. He said he could be bouncing around the whole Peristyle crew. Okay, well, bounce around with me. How do you feel about mixing zones with their normal containment defense? We have great man cover guys, but you can't turn your back on this guy. Oh, you know what? I think, Curtis, we talked about this in Harvey Hyde's podcast. We definitely did. So he was talking about Randall Cunningham. So my apologies for that. But, yeah, I think I'm curious to see what sort of defensive scheme that Clancy Pendergast comes up with. I think he always has a plan. I think they're going to utilize a spy. That is my guess. They'll probably do something like that. Now, who are they going to do it? I'm not exactly sure. But I think they're kind of do that. He likes to come and bring some pressure and play man behind it. So then, like you said, there's guys that are going to be running down the field and not really looking back at the quarterback. I think they'll do some. I'm just not sure they're going to do a significant amount of zone behind that, because I think he's going to really be focused on the line of scrimmage, and I think he's trying to force things to happen. So we'll see with that. All right, let's see. We got Don He said, great emergency reverse podcast. That's the one I did on Sunday. Working even at the airport. Yep, that's what we do here. I believe Cam explained the defensive line issue better than any of the coaches when he said it is tendencies, not ability, which cause the defense to get blown out. The starters all have their tendencies to react to certain formations and or blocking of the offensive line. Cam knows how to react and where to attack due to those tendencies. The freshmen have not developed tendencies yet, so the linebackers are unable to react as quickly. However, Cam did say that SC was no match for Notre Dame. As far as adversity, the coaching staff can adjust to adversity between games, but unable to during games successfully. So that's from Don. I think they've adjusted pretty well in games at times. I think you look at the Utah game, there was a lot of adjustments made there. And, you know, with the how bad everything went for Notre Dame and how good it went for Arizona State, like, they're not as bad as they looked against Notre Dame, and they're probably not as good as they looked as dominating in Arizona State. It's probably closer to the mean, somewhere in the middle. I think there are certain tendencies. I think when you play a one-dimensional team like Notre Dame was, and now I know they were throwing the ball over the top a little bit. There were some great passes, but there were some really awful passes and stuff too. You needed to have a secondary playing well enough behind you that you could kind of try to take over the line of scrimmage, but even that didn't happen. I think just getting guys like Porter Gustin back, who's now going to be out for the Arizona game, so that's huge. I think he made a huge difference for this defense. Now, probably played too much. I think he played 40-something plays. We're going to wait for Shotgun's analysis to come out for that, but I think he was in the 40s. And for him to not practice or even put pads on since the Texas game, the second half of the Texas game, or the first half, he was out, you know, all of the time since, hasn't practiced at all. I'm curious what Shotgun's number is. I think it's in the 40s. If he did play that much, it just seems like a little too much. I mean, whatever the pitch count was, he's probably blew through that. We'll see. But him back, Josh Fatu, who's practicing this week, I think that all kind of helped too. But it's, you got to remember that it is young guys. It is college players, 19, 20, 21 years old. There's a lot of emotion. And if the coaching staff doesn't do a good job getting the team up for a game or getting them prepared, you could see it snowball and get out of control. And I think it did for USC against Notre Dame, and I think it did for Arizona State. When Arizona State's defense was doing there's a cool piece up we put on the Peristyle that SunDevilSource.com put up, a neat analysis with a bunch of clips from the game of how the USC passing attack and running game like defeated the Arizona State defense. Has been playing really well the past 2 weeks. And it really just started off with kind of hitting those shots over the top. There were some simpler route concepts where maybe a double move and, you know, guys were blowing their assignments or not executing right. And Sam Darnold's good enough to find a Deontay Burnett, you know, for a really a perfect pass for a touchdown. I think that kind of loosened up the defense, and then it just opened up everything else too. So that's a really an interesting analysis piece. You could kind of check it out. Here, we're going to play this voicemail, and it kind of goes along with the next email question. Here you go.
Ray again here, a Trojan fan in SEC country. Another comment, I guess this is for Ryan. You can probably address this if you have the time. A player you guys have been really highlighting the just talent this person possesses, got some action this weekend, and I was really proud and happy to see that in the limited action he got, he almost had an interception, and I'm talking about Jamel Cook. Got in the game, batted the ball to, I think it was Ross who ended up making the pick six at the end. And seeing him in pads, it really does crystallize like a lot of the things that you guys have been raving about all offseason, in camp and what have you. He presents a matchup problem for a lot of players, wide receivers, slot receivers. I couldn't even imagine that matchup, and tight ends. He's a really, really versatile player. He looks like he's a legit 6'3", really long arms and really athletic and good hips. He moves fluidly. I'm just happy that he got his playing time. If you could, I don't know what happened, what changed. If you guys have any insight between what happened last the last few weeks, I mean, I haven't even seen him on the sidelines And he shows up in uniform, gets in the game, and almost has an interception. Thanks for all you guys do, and fight on again.
And then we also had Tom, USC class of 86 in New Jersey. He said, without sugarcoating it, why does Jamel Cook, I think he means why doesn't Jamel Cook see the field, particularly given the awful secondary performance year to date? Okay, I wouldn't say it's awful, but thanks for the questions about Jamel Cook. Yeah, it is all very curious. I've really been impressed. Like, I was impressed with the way Tyler Vaughn's played, the other number 21. Now he's becoming a superstar on this team. I was impressed with Jamel Cook. And I think, you know, if you talk to Shotgun, he had some thoughts where he started off good and then kind of fell off a little bit. I don't know. I kind of feel like it was a similar thing to Tyler where he was running with the ones and then they dropped him down to the twos. Now, there's, I think, there, you know, I don't think it's all about play on the field when it comes to Jamel Cook. We don't know exactly, did he get in the doghouse somehow? Is there something that, you know, he doesn't know the playbook? I'm not exactly sure. There's something, there has to be something, because I'm seeing, from what I'm seeing, it just seemed like they were so slow to adapt to bring him on and have him be a part of this team. I'm not really sure. I kind of feel you're going to see him a little bit more. It seems like maybe they're getting more confidence in him. You know, it's, the hard part is it's not like if he's in a wide receiver, he still gets in some. If you're on this defense, you're not getting in. It's just you're not. You know, Clancy Pendergast isn't putting you in unless you're in the short rotation, and he hasn't been in there. Now, we saw him at the, you know, the end of the game, and he got his hands on a ball. And like I said, led to a pick six interception. I kind of like him better as a nickel. They also moved him twice, you know, from safety to nickel and nickel to cornerback. We're going to go to practice today, maybe ask some more questions about him. We've asked about him a lot. We could never really get a straight answer. I mean, yeah, it's, I had heard something like a long time ago, like it just in passing, someone said he thought he was in the doghouse. It kind of made sense to me. Like, what did we have done? I don't know. I think there's also, like we talked about the squeaky wheel thing. You know, there's questions of, well, hey, is he going to end up transferring and stuff like that? They got to get him on the field. So we'll see. And, you know, game like Arizona, you know, there have been other matchup times where you're like, hey, Jamel Cook would be good to be in there and match it up with guys, and they don't do it. And it's not like, you know, I think secondary's played, you know, some of the guys have played really well at times. There have been some lapses, but it's not like the secondary's playing this rock solid lights out that everything would get screwed up if you put Jamel Cook in there too. So I just don't know. But nothing has given me, like, if I'm a Jamel Cook fan and I want to see him into the game, I've not seen anything from the coaches that's given me confidence that, yeah, his turn is just around the corner. I'm, like I said, I'm getting the feeling that they're going to work him in a little bit more, but nothing like, probably nothing like you, if you're a huge fan of his, you would want to see. But I don't know, we'll see. And like I said, I'll talk to the coaches and stuff today. I'm going to try to see what I can find out about number 21, because it just really, the same thing sort of happened to Tyler Vaughn's. And now he's in. We haven't seen the same thing with Jamel Cook. All right, we got one last one before we bring in Jason. Here you go.
Hello, Don Autry. This comment is for Ryan. Ryan, please don't think I'm upset with you about what you said about my statement that USC needs to recruit more black quarterbacks. I think you completely missed my point for saying so. Let me ask you this. Who do you see carrying the ball? The majority of running backs are black athletes, whether it be on the high school, college, or pro level. My point being, black quarterbacks have an extra skill at getting away from the pass rush because of their athletic quickness. It just adds an extra dimension to the offense and another thing for the defense to worry about. Now, your comment about Winbush missing open receivers, who cares? Apparently, he didn't miss his receivers on the two touchdowns that he threw, and Notre Dame won the game. Ryan, I've long watched the history of the few black quarterbacks that USC recruits. They'll give them a scholarship with no intention of them playing quarterback at USC. Just ask Jalen Green. He's an example of what I'm talking about.
Well, thanks for the question again. So a couple of your points there. As far as Jalen Green goes, I think Steve Sarkisian, when he recruited him and brought him in late, had every intention of him letting him play quarterback. He switched back and forth a couple of times. I don't think you could say that every black quarterback that they've recruited, they didn't have any intention of them playing. I think most running backs are black or African American. And quarterbacks are, you know, it's cool now, I think, in college football because you got this mix of quarterbacks and, it's just, but I wouldn't say only black quarterbacks are ones that are quick in the pocket and can get away from a pass rush. And I wouldn't say, just because Brandon Winbush is black doesn't mean he wasn't a good thrower. I just don't think he's a very good passer of the football. Now, he had a couple of really good passes, and he missed a whole bunch of open receivers, too. But, they certainly had the better team. They had the better offensive line. They played better that day. And, I just think you're saying that. Like, if you look at Sam Darnold, one of his abilities is that, he's a white quarterback. He's very good at getting away from the pass rush. And sometimes you got guys that are super fast or super quick. Their vision is poor, black, white, whatever, it doesn't matter. And they don't even sense the pass rush. So you got to have, I think it's just everything. And it doesn't matter, to me, it just doesn't matter kind of what race it is, what race the person is, as far as where they're going to be or how they're going to be successful. But I think just in general, a quicker, more athletic quarterback, I think that's the way that, at least with Clay Helton and USC are going, where you see like a Matt Fink, how fast he can run, stuff like that. So, I think like a Justin Fields, they were recruiting hard. They wanted to get him. He's going to end up picking someplace else. I would say over the last, decade or so, a lot of the guys that they recruited, it just didn't work out. I would say that it's been a hit or miss. If you're talking about, getting a black quarterback in and having them be successful, it's been a lot of misses and just not a lot of hits for whatever reason. I think a variety of reasons, but I would get just stay away from the, I've never seen, I know Clay Helton pretty well now just from seeing him around. And I wouldn't say there's anything kind of racist about, how he's choosing a quarterback or anything like that. I'm not saying that's what you're saying, Don, but just when you're talking about, hey, you should only get this race of a whatever position you're talking about. I always think it's cool. Like when I would watch hockey, and you'd see, there's not that many African-American players. And I would, root for, hey, that's cool, because you don't see those guys very often, Or if you had, there's, an Asian linebacker or something, you're like, oh, that's awesome. You just don't see a lot of those. So, I just the kind of way I look at it and stuff. But, I would just stay away from, black quarterbacks can do this and white quarterbacks can do that. I think there's guys that can do everything. If there's black quarterbacks that aren't as athletic. You see a Warren Moon, he had as good of an arm as anybody, could huck it all over the place. And there's, some white quarterbacks that are quick and elusive and, they just don't even know, where are these guys coming from? So I don't know. But it's good points, Don. We appreciate it. And I guess we'll end it on that. All right. So we're going to do is take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back and we're going to talk to Jason Scheer about this USC-Arizona game.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast, and we are lucky to be joined by Jason Scheer. He does a great job as the publisher and senior editor of WildcatAuthority.com, part of the Scout 247 network. You can follow him on Twitter at Jason Scheer, S-C-H-E-E-R. What's going down in Tucson, Jason? How are you?
Not too much. Doing pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, pretty good. Getting ready for this big one. I said earlier in the show, if you going into the game or going into the season, do you think, USC Arizona would be like this huge matchup in the Pac-12 South? Probably no one would have believed you.
Yeah, this is definitely an extremely surprising turn of events for Arizona, especially the way that the earlier season looked like. I think Arizona fans are are pretty shocked that this is legitimately a big game this weekend.
It is, and so it's funny. So I'm going to USC football practice yesterday, and I have to stop off at CVS Pharmacy. So I live in Hermosa Beach, California, and it's like Redondo Beach is like on the way, like on the way out. And so I pop in the pharmacy, and there's a woman there wearing a full-on Tate jersey, number 14, Arizona hat, got like kind of some Arizona decorations on it and stuff. And so I go up to her and like say hello and say, oh, did you dress up as Khalil Tate for Halloween? And she said, he's my son. So her, so it was funny. So Leslie Tate, she was very, very lovely lady. It was really fun to talk to her. And she had asked me who I was. And she, I'd covered Khalil Tate at Sarah High School. So she kind of knew me from that and stuff. And so we tweeted each other a little bit. But I thought it was pretty funny. Greatest lady in the world. She was so proud of her son, like honor student, all this kind of stuff. So he just seems to be taking the Arizona Wildcat community by storm.
Yeah, it's insane. I'm not sure that I've seen a football player, at least, maybe since Gronkowski, that's really taken a town by storm like he is. I mean, there's an Arizona basketball. It's just an exhibition tonight. But even though it's an exhibition in normal years, it would still get more pub. You wouldn't even know it. I think it hasn't been like this in a while, in the sense where Tate is getting a ton of attention. It's now turned into national attention, and people are actually, for the first time in a long time, talking more about football than basketball, and it's pretty much all because of Khalil Tate and what he's done on the field the past month or so.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some parallels between USC in 2016 and Arizona in 2017, where maybe the head coach started the wrong quarterback to start the season. I mean, the fact that, you know, he's run for more yards, I think, in the month of October than any player in, like, the last 10 years. And, like, any player, like, in the modern era, like, oh, besides two or something, have not run for this many yards in 1 month, and he's a quarterback. It's just crazy what he's been able to do, kind of like what Sam Darnold was doing last year. But then everyone's like, well, where was he to start the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, Rich Rodriguez now will say that he was going to put Khalil Tate in against Colorado, even if Brandon Dawkins didn't get hurt. But I kind of don't believe that. I mean, Brandon Dawkins was the QB. He was really bad against Utah. Against Colorado, he gets hurt really early in the game. Khalil Tate comes in and just goes off. I mean, he went absolutely off against Colorado. And you can make an argument that if Brandon Dawkins doesn't get injured, he's probably the starting quarterback against USC, and we have no idea what Khalil Tate can do. And in a way, you know, it's interesting because Rich Rodriguez went from a coach that, you know, we were thinking of making a hot board at one point when they were 2-2, to now he has a chance to win the conference coach of the year. And in a way, it's by accident, because if Brandon Dawkins doesn't get hurt, he's probably still the starting quarterback unless he plays really, really poorly.
Which is hilarious. And I think one of your writers, Christian Corona, had an interesting stat about. Let me get this right. So he, over this like last four games, he's passed for 700 yards, ran for 700 yards, threw for five touchdowns or more, and ran for five touchdowns or more. So the last time someone did that was Denard Robinson for Michigan 7 years ago. So pretty crazy, like the what he's been able to do. You know, completing 70% of his passes. I mean, it's amazing. Just All of the stats are just mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stats, it's almost like we're trying to come up with different ways that we can say how good he's been. I mean, the 10-year thing with the rushing, there's another stat that said, like, in the modern era, his QB rating for this month is, like, the highest in the modern era in the last 20 years or something like that. And there's just stats. He's, like, he's top 10 in rushing already, and he's only started in four games. So it's just unreal what he's been able to do. And throwing, I think, has been the biggest, most impressive aspect of his game, because Washington State looked like they were taking away the run, and then all of a sudden he was throwing downfield. He's a much better thrower, I think, than people give him credit for. His efficiency rating in the air, he's completing like 70% of his passes, and a lot of them are just downfield. So he's a guy where he can basically right now at least do absolutely no wrong on the field.
He's a big play guy, and won the Pac-12 Player of the Week 4 weeks in a row. No one's ever done that. I vote, and I was like trying to figure out reasons not to vote for. You know, you're like, okay, he can't win again. You know, and there's other guys that are deserving too, but it's pretty amazing. I mean, to have a guy win at 4 weeks in a row, And I know they talk about, well, Arizona's been on the Pac-12 network, so no one's seeing it. But I think the people that I think the people that cover college football are watching them when they can, and they're seeing it. And even though this is going to be a really late game, they're going to watch, you know. And I think a lot of people are going to, their opinions on Khalil Tate are going to be based on what happens Saturday night, right or wrong, because at least it'll be on ESPN where everyone can see him.
Right. I mean, he's been putting up these crazy numbers, and Arizona's last three games have been on the Pac-12 network. And, you know, it'll go one of two ways. Either he'll play great on national television and people love him anymore, and he'll take off. And my guess is people will start talking about him and the Heisman consideration, all that, or he'll play poorly and unfairly probably. People say, oh, well, you know, he just kind of got hot at the right time. And but either way, I think he's going to be on national television. He has a big stage. Arizona hasn't been on a major network in about a month. So it's a big opportunity for him. And it's really a big opportunity for Arizona football, because if they somehow win this game nationally, I think the brand overall and just what Arizona can do, and Khalil Tate especially, it'll definitely start to gain more momentum than it has right now.
Yeah, the it's going to be a big game, obviously. You know, what do you feel as far as like gut feeling about Khalil Tate and the rest of the Wildcats being able to handle the moment? I guess if you watch the Pac-12 week to week, and we do, I mean, it's hard to tell. Like, Colorado's garbage, and then they're great. And, you know, you'd see Steven Montez can't throw anything, and then he's a Heisman Trophy-looking quarterback. USC lays an egg, then they look awesome against ASU. We've just seen these teams go up and down, like a Stanford just rolling people and then beating Oregon State by a point in the last second. It's hard to kind of predict what's going to happen in the Pac-12, but any kind of sense going into this, do you feel like the moment's going to be too big, or it's peaking at the right time and it looks like it's going to be this epic matchup?
You know, it's interesting, because talking to the guys, there's a quiet confidence. It's the sense where they believe that they can beat USC, but I think they also know that they kind of need to in order to have people acknowledge the success that they've had. And I don't think the moment will be too big. I think that what's maybe most impressive about Khalil Tate, the person, is that he's a pretty humble kid. He gives credit to, he's one of these quarterbacks, gives credit to his offensive line. What, pretty much no matter what you ask him, doesn't really talk about himself that much, doesn't really like to. And so I don't think the moment's going to be too big for him, especially coming from Sarah, where they had a lot of big high school games, and he's used to playing against this really good competition. And Rich Rodriguez does a good job. He basically said that he lets them be nervous throughout the week. He lets them acknowledge it's a big game, and he kind of wants them to feel that energy. But once they get on that plane to go to USC, that energy, it needs to be turned into something good. And I think that they've generally in the past done a pretty good job at that. I don't think the moment will be too big. USC may just be the better team. But if USC wins, I don't think it'll be because Arizona's kind of overwhelmed by facing the Trojans and the moment overall.
So the run game, too, obviously Khalil Tate's been a huge part of that. But J.J. Taylor, I think, has been really good. And kind of when – I think in the last game he kind of started off slow, but then he broke off a big run later. Like, how important has his development been to helping Tate have like a second, like, you know, home run threat option back there?
It's huge, because Nick Wilson is a guy where, you know, Nick Wilson has been hurt every year. Once again, he's hurt. He's probably questionable for USC. My guess is that he plays, but even if he plays, you don't really know what you're going to get. So J.J. Taylor becomes kind of that top guy. They have another guy, Zach Green, but he's more of a power back. And so what happened against Washington State was they kind of started over-pursuing and over-penetrating to get to Tate, and that opened it up for Taylor, and Taylor just went off. He had two huge runs, finished with 150 yards. And so when he's running and Tate's able to run and kind of throw those tight ends, it's kind of a pick-your-poison situation. And when Arizona's running backs aren't going, it makes it easier, obviously, to cover Arizona. But when a guy like Taylor is as successful as he was against Washington State, it's pretty much impossible to stop Arizona. You pretty much have to say to yourself, all right, we're just going to have to outscore him, and it's going to be a shootout type of game. But teams that have been able to kind of take the running backs away those games are kind of closer. Even Cal did it, and that game was closer, even though Tate wound up kind of stepping up late. But if I'm USC, I'm probably trying to focus on stopping Taylor, Nick Wilson, and Zach Green the most, because Tate's kind of the guy you get the feeling he's going to get his. But if that actual pure running game struggles, I think Arizona's offense slows down a little bit, which obviously is important.
So this is a team that's been obviously electric on offense, as we've been talking about. maybe not the best on defense. The last five games, opponents, I think, are averaging almost 37 points per game. What have you seen from this Wildcat defense? Have they kind of, I don't know, got some momentum from this Khalil Tate train that everyone's riding in? But it seems like they're still giving up a bunch of points.
Yeah, it's a weird, kind of a weird defense because they're giving up a lot of points, but they're not necessarily giving up a lot of yards per play. And against Washington State, they gave up the points, but one of the touchdowns was off a muffed fumble where Washington State started at the 29-yard line, and another one was off another fumble in which Washington State started at, like, the 23. And so that handed the Cougars, and I think there was another turnover, so that handed the Cougars, like, 17 points on offense. And they allowed a ton of yards, but that was kind of – it felt like that was their strategy almost on kind of keep them in front of them and don't allow the big play. What you'll see from Arizona's defense is they're really aggressive, and I have a feeling they'll be the same way against USC. They blitz a lot more than any other pass defense under Rich Rodriguez by far. They'll stunt a lot on the defensive line. They'll send blitzes from the linebackers. They'll play a lot of zone blitz, so they'll be really aggressive. It gives up big plays if the offensive line, the opposing offensive line, could handle the blitz. A lot of times Arizona's defense will struggle, but the payoff is basically that Arizona leads the conference in interceptions, I think. So they'll force turnovers. They force them at a much higher rate than they have in previous years under Rodriguez, but they're also going to allow those big plays because they're blitzing. There's a lot of talent there. There's talent to be successful, but they're really, really young. And so it's the type of defense where they'll struggle now, but I think in a few years, or even next season, they'll be much better. But there's some major growing pains on the defense, but you still kind of see flashes of potential as well.
Yeah, that's. I think one of the aspects of this team, they do force turnovers, and that's something that USC's had a propensity to do. They've given the ball over a lot, so I think that could be one of the key factors here. If even though give a bunch of yards and give up some points, if Arizona is able to force Sam Darnold into turning the ball over, kind of, he didn't do a bad job against Arizona State with just one, but usually they're two or three a game. I think that could be a key factor here.
Yeah, and I think that's Arizona's strategy. There's no way Arizona's going to sit back on defense and win this game. They'll get absolutely killed if they're not aggressive. And so I think ideally if Arizona's going to win this game, they probably have to force two to three turnovers because anything less than that, and my guess is Arizona has a really difficult time winning. So I think you'll see a lot of blitzing and stunting, and Arizona's going to really kind of try to press the issue and try to force an early turnover especially.
Let's talk about special teams real quick, too. It seems like this is an Arizona squad that's been really good with punt returns, kickoff returns. I would say that's not an area of strength for USC, anything on the special teams aspect. How would you rate kind of how Arizona's special teams have played this year?
It's been solid. I think the field goal kicking, they have one kicker for short field goals, Josh Pollock, and he's all right. I think he's like 9 of 13 on the year. And then they have a kicker they bring in for long field goals, Lucas Havrasik. He does kickoffs also. He's really, really good. He hit a 57-yard field goal last game. Kickoffs, he's pretty much almost a lock to kick it out of the end zone. Punting is where they've really struggled. They do not have a good punter. It's near the bottom of the conference. And so that's a situation where my guess is Arizona doesn't even try to punt it to USC. It's just kind of how the punts have been going. They shank one a game, it feels like. So punting is probably a worry for Arizona. It'll be interesting how they handle that. Punt returns, kickoff returns, they're all right. Nothing explosive, but they're better than they were last year. I wouldn't call them a super special teams. They're pretty much adequate. But punting, I think if you're looking for a concern and maybe an advantage for USC, Arizona's punting has really struggled as of late.
Well, how do you kind of see this one playing out? I mean, I'm just not really sure. I don't know if USC is a 7-point favorite. That's what the odds makers kind of have it. What do you any kind of gut feeling about this one, Jason?
You know, like for the last 3 weeks, I've said to myself, there's no way Khalil Tate can go off again. And as soon as he does it, Arizona's going to lose. But it keeps happening. And I still say to myself, I don't know if Khalil Tate can put out 300 yards passing and 150 yards rushing on USC. And so I think while he has a good game, I don't really trust Arizona's defense. I think Arizona's going to have difficulty stopping USC. I think USC is more likely to stop Arizona than vice versa. I think it's going to be a really fun game. I don't think Arizona's going to get blown out. I think that offense is too good right now. So I think it's going to be one of these crazy Pac-12 games. But I think at the end of the day, USC just has more horses on both sides of the ball than Arizona. So Arizona's going to It's easily. I know they played Washington State and Washington State beat USC, but I still consider overall USC to be a better team than Washington State, especially at home. So I think Arizona is facing its most difficult challenge in Pac-12 season so far. So I think a lot would have to go right for Arizona to win this game.
Yeah, man, it's funny. Like, I hear people saying that, but just the way they've been playing has been pretty special. And USC's played well like twice this year. last week against Arizona State and Stanford, but so many other times they just have not played very well. They've played poorly. I think it's going to be a really good one. And, neither team is out of it if they lose this one, but obviously you have the pole position for the Pac-12 South. And, Utah's been trying to win the South. They couldn't do it. Rich Rod did this a few years ago, and if he's able to do it again, especially after being on the hot seat, I mean, props to him, because both him and Todd Graham, people were writing off as they're going to be gone at the end of the season. And like you said, Rich Rod, candidate for Coach of the Year. But if he's able to secure a win at USC, have a stranglehold on the Pac-12 South, it'd be amazing for him to get back there. It's probably not a program that's going to win every year, but if he can show, hey, I can win this every, 3 or 4 years or something, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, for all the criticism he took, you could kind of tell when he goes to these press conferences after a win, and he's kind of got a little extra hop in his step. He knows what people were saying about him. He knows that he was pretty much fired in the community when they were 2-2 and they got beat by Houston and Utah. And looking back on it, he still faces criticism because people still say, hey, if you started to tape for the beginning, I mean, Arizona lost that Houston and Utah game by a touchdown. And so in Arizona fans' minds, they could be undefeated right now. But even though that's not the case, if he beats USC, this town's going to go nuts because Arizona still has, it's not an easy schedule. They still have at Oregon and at ASU, but they have Oregon State. And you never know. They could be in a situation where they're going into that ASU game with a lock on the conference already. So this is a really big game, I think, for Rich Rodriguez and I think for the community as a whole, because if he could find a way to win the South somehow again, that's pretty remarkable considering where we thought this team was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, pretty crazy. You never know what to expect. You think, oh, this team's going to be here, this team's going to be there. And from week to week, it can change. And obviously over a course of a month, the last month for Arizona football has been absolutely outstanding. And looking forward to this one, Jason. But thanks for coming on and sharing some insights. We really appreciate you talking about the Wildcats.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Jason Shear. Make sure you check him out. Covering Arizona and, basketball too. Jason, there's like basketball stuff going on, right? Like Arizona people care about basketball a little bit, I guess, right?
There's a game tonight and a game on Sunday. It's interesting. We'll see how much they care though with all the, we can relay with all the FBI stuff.
Yeah, that's what USC at Arizona. But see, that it's just such, there's such more of a, obviously the Arizona basketball culture is so much more than what USC is. But this is the first time USC hoops has been ranked in the AP top 10 since 1975, which is kind of crazy. But they're doing those, are these the secret games, right? The ones we're not supposed to go to or report on and stuff like that? Or are these actual games you can talk about?
No, these are actual public scrimmages. They have one tonight against like Eastern New Mexico State or something like that, where it'll be a terrible game, but the fans like it. So
yeah, USC had one like the other day. I forget who it was, but it was like one of those behind closed doors that you're not allowed to talk about and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
kind of getting rolling and stuff. But yeah, basketball season's here, but it's not going to trump what's going to happen Saturday night in the Coliseum. So thanks again, Jason, and everyone else. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. We will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.